A guy whose TV show I have watched a lot of over the last decade plus. His name is James Lipton. He is the host of Inside the Actors Studio, which is not on a regular basis on Bravo, but I don't think a day goes by when they're not airing either a new episode or rerunning an old one. And I don't know what the taping schedule is or what he's got coming up. We'll find out in a moment. But he has a book that he's written about that series and about his own life as well. It's called Inside, Inside. James Lipton, welcome to KMOX.
Thank you very much, Paul.
How many times in those 200 or more episodes have you sat there and said to yourself, I can't believe I'm sitting here with so-and-so just talking?
A lot of times. Sure, a lot of times. When you think of the people who have been on the show, it's impossible not to be impressed by them. They are icons. But I hope that once the show starts, after a minute or two, we're just two people talking. That was the intention from the beginning, that it'd be a conversation.
And it's obvious that the guests you bring onto the show enjoy that conversation. I'm curious about how much time they actually have to devote to you. I know you're making up an hour of television in most cases, sometimes two, but how many hours are they actually with you on those evenings?
About four on average, sometimes five and sometimes six.
Wow.
Well, remember, we're the Actors Studio Drama School at Pace University. I was its founding dean. I'm now dean emeritus. Those are master's degree candidates out there, actors, writers, directors, earning their master's. And so it's a different dynamic. They're with me usually, depending on the body of work that we're examining, for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and then there's a break, and then they're with the students for an hour or two. So it adds up to a whole evening. But I've had to throw them out sometimes at 12:30 in the morning. Streisand, Tony Hopkins, Dustin Hoffman, Billy Joel, several of them. I've had to just step in front of them and say, these kids have to go to class in a few hours. Out, everybody out. They would stay all night, so would the students.
And have you had the opposite, where people weren't having a good time and wanted out of there?
I don't think so. If they weren't having a good time, nobody ever let on that they weren't. We've had a lot of satisfied customers.
When you are reviewing the careers of your interviewees, and it's obvious you do an enormous amount of that to put together those 500 or so famous blue cards.
Right.
You go back and you watch the movies, and do you find yourself seeing things that you missed the first or second time you saw those movies?
Sure. Of course. It's inevitable. If you watch a movie a second time, you go to the theater for a second look at a play, you're going to see things you didn't see the first time because you're now focusing on new aspects of it.
And when you're sitting there talking to a guest and you know things are going to get emotional, is there a part of you that says, I don't want to push them too far here?
I don't know that it's going to become emotional. You can't tell. It happens in a split second.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Spike Lee just simply looked down for a moment, and when he looked up, his glasses had filled with tears, and they began to spill down his cheeks. I mean, you don't know. And then I'm not going to interrupt somebody and say, oh, don't do that, please. And I never know when it's going to happen, neither do they, because there's no pre-interview on my show. That's why I do my own homework for 2 weeks before each guest. And I think that's also one of the characteristics of the show. And the result is that, look, also, I'm asking them questions that have to do with the people and events of their lives that shaped them as artists and as people. And when they begin to recount those events, sometimes the emotions that it evokes are unstoppable. It's a natural process. I'm not trying to make them cry. It just happens. And I discuss it in depth in my book, in Inside, Inside.
When you talk to many of these people, you get great stories out of them, but many of them come on and they are just natural performers. They love being in front of an audience. You just did your second show with Alec Baldwin, and he's a money in the bank guest. Nathan Lane, Tom Hanks, Robin Williams, and others. Who have you had on the show who surprised you as a better guest than even you expected?
Many of them. First of all, I have no expectations that in that regard. My criterion for each of my guests is, does this person have something to teach our students? That's the only criterion. So it's very difficult for me to be disappointed or for them to exceed it. They simply, what happens is that it evolves. And whatever happens, happens. And I have found that some of the shyest, genuinely shyest guests, like De Niro, and Paul Newman is very shy. Many of my guests, James Gandolfini, have never appeared anyplace else in this circumstance. And they begin very, very shyly. That's their right. But as they begin to talk about the things that matter to them, craft, which is what the show is about, they open up. And also, those are students out there. They're not dewy-eyed fans. It's a different dynamic. And they become very caught up in it. And sometimes the shyest ones become the most excited by the experience and the most giving.
News Talk 1120 KMOX, Paul Harris talking with James Lipton, the creator and host of Inside the Actor's Studio, who writes about his own life and the show in a terrific new book called Inside, Inside. On the show, James, you have talked to several actresses about their beauty, their looks, their sexuality.
Yeah.
Share some of that with us. What have they told you?
It's interesting. I mean, I found myself, to my astonishment, trying to buck Julia Roberts up. She doesn't think she's beautiful. She kept saying, "Oh, when I was young, look at those pictures. I was ugly." I'm trying to comfort some of the most beautiful women in the world. You think of Angelina Jolie and Natalie Portman and Sharon Stone. Name the people who have been on this show. Who are Michelle Pfeiffer, fabulous beauties. One of the things I've discovered about each of them is that they do not think that they are beautiful. They know that the world sees something in them. I've asked them often, do you think it's a hindrance or a help? And the answer is always, it's both. Magnificent women are saying there are parts that I don't get, that I want, because they just they think I'm just pretty. And that upsets them. On the other hand, they admit that it's a very good entree when they're young into the film business because the camera likes beautiful people. But I have had, without question, some of the most beautiful women in the world sitting 3 feet from me for 3 or 4 or 5 hours. And let me tell you that it has an effect. Well, you're within their aura.
Sure.
But they're not, they're very modest about it. They're not sitting there thinking, I'm pretty, I'm pretty, I'm pretty. It just, they're too busy with other things. And some of them, I mean, Charlize Theron, for example, she's a goddess. But at the same time, she was talking about things like the death of her father, who was shot in front of her by her mother. I mean, those are not moments when someone is displaying beauty. Instead, she's talking about the things that matter, the same things that would matter to you or to me.
Is there a male equivalent of that question? Have you talked to any of the actors, the men, about their looks?
Oh, sure. I said to Hugh Grant, we were talking about pictures like Notting Hill, where we were supposed to be convinced that he wasn't good-looking enough to get a date.
Yeah.
Problems getting dates. And I was trying to couch it in careful terms. I didn't want to just say, you're pretty or you're handsomer. So I said, well, let's face it, you're better-looking than, say, Woody Allen. He said, is that your make-out line? I said, I'm married. He said, well, how does your wife feel about it? What do you say to your wife? I said, ask her. Where is she? And he looked out in the audience and just gazed out there. He said, hi, Woody. Oh, I'm sorry. I said, come on. My wife is a famous beauty. She's half Japanese, half Irish. She's very beautiful. By the way, she's in the book. You see a whole page of her, including a gorgeous naked painting of her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a fabled beauty. Anyway, I didn't say that. Then I just said, ask the students. They'll tell you. He put on his glasses, and he looked out in the audience. And then he saw her, and he said, ooh, lethal. And that night as we were going to sleep, I could hear her on the other side of the bed over the hum of the air conditioner murmuring, ooh, lethal.
And did she call you Hugh that night?
No, she did not. I wish she had thought I was Hugh. He's beautiful. He is beautiful.
Do you get calls from publicists wanting to have their clients on your show?
Sure. Especially in the fall when they think that the client may have a chance for an Oscar. Again, I write about that in the book. The number of our guests whom we put on the air during the Oscar voting period and who then won the Oscar. One year we had all four supporting and leading actor and actress. And one of the most famous PR people in Hollywood said to me, you don't know, do you? I said, what? She said, your show is now considered to be the prime forum if one of our clients wants an Oscar. You're number one, because everybody in Los Angeles watches it, and the next day at lunch, everybody's talking about it. So all the voters are watching the show. And yes, I get a lot of calls, especially this time of year, from PR people.
So you're influencing the outcome of the Oscars?
That's what they think. I don't know whether that's so or not. But that is the common wisdom, is that the best place to wind up if you want to get an Oscar is on our show, because we go into depth and we spend an hour with the person or even 2 hours, and we give them a very close, and we're looking at their craft, which is what, after all, in the end, the Oscars is about.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with James Lipton, creator and host of Inside the Actors Studio. His new book is called Inside, Inside. Several hundred pages where he talks about his career and the show, which is now put on 200 or more episodes. It's been nominated for 13 Emmys. It is seen not only here in the U.S., but worldwide. And I wonder if any of the people in France are going to be stunned to find out that you you were once a pimp in France. This is your revelation from your book.
Don't I know it. Listen, I finished that chapter. And we were out in the country in the Hamptons in our house. And I walked out of the room and I handed it to my wife and I said, read this. A few minutes later, she reappeared. She said, you can't print this. And I said, look, I put myself in that guest chair for this book. And I expect of myself the same candor that I have asked of my guests. How can I leave it out? It was a defining moment of my life. Look, the answer is that I was very young. The world was young. I was young. Paris was young. We're talking about a very long time ago. I was very young. I arrived in Europe. I had never been out of the United States before. I came from a very poor background. My father, as you know from the book, was a famous beatnik poet. My mother was a teacher. My father left when I was six. We had nothing, nothing. And so I came from this background, suddenly finding myself, this was decades ago when I was very young, in Paris in March. A wonderful experience. I was overwhelmed. And I wanted to stay there. I wanted to. There's something in French called rite de passage, rites of passage, where you learn about yourself in a different environment. That's what I wanted and expected there. But I couldn't work. It was, you know, Paris, France was 20 years recovering from the war and from the occupation. So those 2 decades, it was tough for the men, impossible for the women to work. I couldn't get a work permit. But the women in those days would go into this work, into the milieu, it's called in French, and they could come out of it in the end. They'd save their money, and then they would come out of it. Some of them were working their way through school. Some were putting somebody else through school. They were saving for various purposes. And there was no opprobrium. Also, it was carefully regulated. They were medically examined every week. It was a different, very, very different world. It's nothing like today. Today, it's a horror everywhere in the world. It's slavery and disease and exploitation. But the point is that I made as I explained in the book, I made friends with a young woman who worked in the milieu. And she was beautiful. She was in Cannes. She had, in French we say, hair, la couleur de tous les miel, color of all the honeys. She looked like one of those, you know, Riviera women. And she was working in the milieu. She was saving her money. She wanted to open a perfumery someday in Cannes, in her hometown. And we became friends. And I used to have supper with her every night. At midnight, I'd go back to this bordello, and we'd sit in the bar and talk. And finally, one night I said to her, I have to go back to America. She said, why? I said, well, I just have to go back. She said, you're broke, aren't you? And I said, yes. And she said, the problem is solved. You'll be my mech. Now, the difference between a mech and a pimp is that a pimp exploits women, often brutally, more now than then, whereas a mech works for the woman. And so I became her mech. She had to have it authorized, otherwise they would have found me floating in the sand. It's a very strictly regulated profession. And I would bring tourists, young tourists who arrived in those days in France, expecting to see Notre Dame and Saint-Chapelle, but hoping also to have an adventure. I was the means to that adventure. I would take them into this place where she worked and the other women worked, and I knew them all. I was part of that world now. And I would arrange for them demonstrations. Now you can see it in every video store. It's commonplace. But in those days, it was very, very exotic. 2 women, a man and a woman, whatever they wanted. And I would accompany them there and make sure they were all right. And this is how I earned my living for several months.
Did you at any point during those months say to yourself, oh, maybe this isn't the right thing to do?
No, I didn't. I knew that I was after an adventure, and I was having the adventure. It was very different. You have to realize it was not. It was these people were different, and the French had an entirely different attitude. Some of those bordellos were palaces. It was all regulated, and they were the women were treated like geishas. Now, of course, it's different. Now it is. It's unforgivable, inexcusable. And I don't excuse myself. I was very young, and I was looking for an adventure, and I had an adventure. And I say at the end of the chapter, it ends very, very ruefully, because I came back to America and never saw her again. And she was a good friend. She was very bright. And she was very frugal. She saved all her money. And I say every time I go to Cannes on the Riviera, I take a walk hoping to find a perfumery called Regine's, but I've never found one. So I guess she didn't achieve her ambition. But I liked her, and I was able by that means to stay in Europe and to learn a lot and to have, I think, an experience that was perhaps not praiseworthy, but was not disgraceful.
This is News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with James Lipton, the creator and host of Inside the Actor's Studio. He writes about it in a terrific new book called Inside, Inside. And before we go back to the show and the book, you mentioned your beautiful wife earlier. True or false, your wife is a character in the board game Clue.
She is Miss Scarlet. There's a picture of her. There are many pictures, beautiful pictures in the book, photographs, color photographs. There's the card, says Miss Scarlet. Let me tell you something. When you're playing Clue and you pick up a card and it's your wife, and it turns out that she was guilty of the murder in the library with the candlestick, it gives you a bit of a turn.
Yeah.
You know who loves it? Jimmy Kimmel loves that fact. He can't get over that fact. I remember I was on the show, and I gave the bound galleys of the book, the unfinished book, to Jimmy, but there were the photographs. And he was leafing through it, and he said, oh, look, here's you and Bob Hope on the Great Wall of China. Wow, that's something. Here you are with Jimmy Carter in the Oval Office with the President of the United States. Here you are with Mrs. Reagan. Whoa, he said. He turned to my wife. He said, you were Miss Scarlet? And she said, yep. He said, oh, you must know Colonel Mustard. That was the thing that leapt out of the book at him. My wife was Miss Scarlet. Since then, I've been on the show, and he insisted she sit in the front row, and he introduced her to the world. He said, this is Miss Scarlet. That impressed him more than presidents of the United States, more than the fact that I did the first American television show in China, more than the fact that I worked for 12 years with Bob Hope on his birthday specials. Those things all sort of faded into the background as he exulted in my wife's in her fame as Miss Scarlet. And she is a great beauty. She's half Japanese and half Irish, and you sort of can't avoid it. And then just below that on the page, but still not as impressive to Jimmy Kimmel as the top of the page, is the famous Paris Review poster, a beautiful painting of my wife, quite nude.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Miss Scarlet was what did it for him.
Now, I would not be doing my job, James, and in fact, as an interviewer, you can understand now that I have to ask this question. How does your wife become Miss Scarlet?
She was when I met her, she was a very, very famous model. Because of her, what you can see there, she's just unforgivably beautiful as any of the beautiful women who have sat so near me on that stage.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very modest, unlike me. I'm sitting here bragging to you and bragging and bragging. But my wife, who has much more reason to be proud of herself, is very modest. And somebody said to me, have you seen the Clue game? No, they brought it to me. There was Katakai. And so that night I confronted her. I said, well, what is this? How come? Oh, she said, I did a job a few months ago. I guess that's what it was. Just like that. She was asked to model.
Wow. Wow. You have done some remarkable shows with members of the acting profession through the years in the more than 200 episodes of Inside the Actor's Studio. But you've also done a couple of musical episodes, including one of my favorite two-hour shows that you did with Billy Joel.
Oh, yeah.
And you did another one with Elton John.
Yes, and one with Liza Minnelli and one with Diana Ross.
I wonder if you had the same reaction to Billy Joel that I did, and I've interviewed him several times.
Yeah.
And I've always thought, and this is before he even started doing his master's classes around the country, I've always thought, this guy is a terrific professor of music.
He's a teacher. He talks about it on our show. I talk about it in the book. I quote so much in the book from my guests. And he talked about which keys he likes to write in. He says the flat keys are the friends of the composer, the sharps are the enemy. And he talks very technically, and he loves to teach, and he taught brilliantly the night he was with us, and he sang his heart out.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal show. And when Elton John was on, you write about this in the book as well, you talked to him about writing music, writing lyrics, and how long some songs take, and you asked him how long it took to write Your Song, one of the all-time great classics.
Right.
And he told you it took about 30 minutes.
30 minutes. And then I describe in the book, there are two improvisations in the history of the show that are the most famous. One was Robin Williams with the pink scarf, the pashmina. The other was Elton. In the classroom, I tell in the book, a student was questioned how he could possibly write a song in 30 minutes. And Elton said, well, I do. And then there was some doubt in the house. He said, anybody got a book? Come on, you're actors. Give me a book. So the student handed him a book. He said, Ibsen's Peer Gynt. Went to the piano, wedged the open book on the piano desk, and played a couple of chords, found his chords, and began to sing. And he improvised an entire scene from Ibsen's Peer Gynt. Beautiful chords, harmony, gorgeous melody, shape, form, just without pausing. He went right through and actually improvised a musical version of Peer Gynt in front of the audience, did it instantaneously, and then stood up and said, well, that's how.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable, and one of the many memorable moments on Inside the Actor's Studio. One of my personal favorites, James, was after your interview with Kevin Spacey was over, and he was taking questions from some of your students, and one of them had brought the script to Glengarry Glen Ross and asked if he could do it with Kevin.
Absolutely, and they did it. And, I mean, our students are very lucky. The students at the Actors Studio Drama School of Pace University are very, very fortunate because they have these experiences, many of these experiences, during their 3 years earning their MFA. And yeah, that kid had brought it. His hand was shaking so hard as he held his part of the script that he could barely focus on it. But Kevin acted with him, and the two of them read the scene together. Another student asked if John Travolta would dance with her, and he did.
Who do you have coming up?
The next one that you'll see on the air is John Cusack. We've just had Halle Berry. We've just had Alec Baldwin. And then will come the 200th episode of our show. And that's a big surprise.
Is that a single person, or is that a retrospective?
It's a big clip show with lots and lots of retrospective clips. But the guest will surprise you.
Okay. Can you tell me a couple of people who you've been trying to get, but for whatever reason, they don't want to do the show?
No, not a question don't want to. The only one who didn't want to was Marlon. But he didn't want to do anybody's show. Mm. He was reclusive by the time we began this. But I can tell you the guest I want more than any other.
Mm-hmm.
And I admit it in the book as well. And that is the night that one of our graduated students has achieved so much that he or she walks out on that stage and sits down in that chair. That will be the guest I've waited for from the day we opened our doors.
Well, James, I'm looking forward to the next episode and many more episodes of Inside the Actor's Studio. The book was a fascinating read, and it's really been a pleasure having you on today.
Thanks, Paul. This was a good interview. I'd like to be able to speak and talk and listen for a little while, which is what you afford your guests, obviously. I didn't know that until we spoke. But this has been a great pleasure to me.
Thank you. I hope we can do it again sometime.
I'd love to.
James Lipton, creator and host of Inside the Actor's Studio. The book is called Inside, Inside. And by the way, if you use the link on KMOX.com to buy it, we will give a portion of the proceeds to St. Louis Children's Hospital.
Oh, yes. Thank you.